Most venerable Bhikkhu Sangha and friends, we have assembled here this afternoon to discuss the teaching of the Enlightened One, The teaching is so simple and yet so deep, so deep. He has explained his teachings in few words when he said, "Sab papasya ekaranam kusalasya upasampada sa citta pariyodapanam etang buddhana sasanam etang buddhana sasanam." This is the sasana of all the Buddhas, not just Gautama the Buddha. Everyone who becomes a Buddha will teach nothing but only these three: sab papas ekaranam, abstain from all unwholesome actions, evil actions, sinful actions; kusalasya upasampada, perform wholesome actions, pious actions; and se chitta pariyodapanam, keep on purifying your mind, keep on purifying your mind. That's all. So simple and yet so deep, so profound. At the surface level, it looks so simple. This is the greatest common denominator of all the religions of the world. Any religion worth the name will say, abstain from sinful action. Every religion will say that. Perform good actions. Every religion will say that. Purify your mind. Every religion will say that. But there is some speciality. Speciality in the teaching of a Buddha. Let us understand what is this speciality of Buddha, which makes him Buddha. If it was just a question of giving sermons, then Buddha stands on the same level like any other religious teacher. But Buddha does not merely give sermons. He gives us a way, a technique, a practice by which we can live the life of Dhamma. Mere sermons won't help. I know for myself, I come from a very staunch, conservative Hindu family. All these three were there in my religion, the religion that I was practicing from my childhood. all the scriptures of India, Brahminical scriptures or Jain scriptures, Sikh scriptures, all religious teachings of all the religious saints, not only of India but outside also, contain all these three things. Then what was speciality? To live the life of morality is acceptable by one and all at the intellectual level. Yes, I must live a life of morality. I accept it. Or at devotional level, because a Buddha says so, or the founder of this religion or that religion says so, and I am from that particular sect, from that particular religion, from that particular tradition, therefore I must live a life of morality. One accepts at the devotional level. One accepts at the intellectual level. I must perform wholesome actions, good actions. Yes, one accepts at the devotional level. One accepts at the intellectual level. I must purify my mind. One accepts at the devotional level. One accepts at the intellectual level. But it is so difficult to accept at the actual level, the experiential level. The experiential level is missing, and if that is missing, everything is missing. Someone becomes a Buddha, he teaches the experiential level of Dhamma. Abstain from sinful actions. How to abstain? How to abstain? Perform good actions. How to perform good actions? Purify the mind. How to purify the mind? This is where the speciality, this is where the superiority of Buddha comes into picture. He has a way, a very wonderful way. Now the first part, which we call Sila, Tila, abstain from sinful action. A religious teacher will tell you that if you perform sinful actions, you will go to hell. If you abstain from sinful actions, you will get heaven. Yes, it is true. But yet, there will be many, many around the world. Today there are many more around the world who will just laugh at it. Who cares for the next life? Where is hell? Where is heaven? If I enjoy this life, it's good for me. People won't follow. Then the teaching is given at the intellectual level. All right, human being is a social being. He has to live in the society. He has to live with the members of the family. He has to live with others, even if one has become a recluse or a monk or a nun, yet one remains in contact with the other members of the society. If you perform any action which disturbs the peace and harmony of the society, how can you have peace and harmony with you? How can you live a life of peace and harmony? Yes. Intellectually one starts understanding, yes. If I burn fire all around me, I have to suffer the heat of this fire around me. I cannot experience cool sensations within myself. I will suffer this heat because I have generated this heat all around. Yes, looks logical. And then another explanation is given. If someone comes to kill you, someone hits you, certainly you don't like it. Yes, I don't like it. Then if you hit somebody and try to kill somebody, that person won't like it, isn't it? Yes, that person won't like it. Then you should not do something which you don't like others to do towards you. Don't kill. Yes, I should not kill. You are correct. If somebody comes and steals away something belonging to me, which is very dear to me, I don't like it. So I should not steal something belonging to somebody else because this person will not like it. Yes, logical. I should not steal. If somebody commits sexual misconduct with a member of my family, I don't like it. So I should not perform some action like this. Yes, quite logical. If someone speaks lies and tries to deceive me, I don't like it. So I should not speak lie and try to deceive others. Quite logical. And all these four I understand that I should not perform. I should not perform such vocal actions which are harmful to others. I should not perform such physical actions which are harmful to others. And yet, when I take intoxicants, I become a slave of intoxicants. And I do what I should not do. Therefore, I should not take intoxicants. Good. All these five shilas seem to be very acceptable at the logical level, at the rational level, at the intellectual level. But yet, people do not live the life of shila. Even those who understand that I must live the life of shila, shila is so important for me, a life of morality is so good for me, so good for others, and yet one does not live. Why? A Buddha understands it properly. Why? Because one has no control over the mind. One is not the master of one's own mind. An addict of alcohol knows very well, I should not take alcohol. Alcohol is no good for me. And yet when the time comes, he succumbs. He can't control himself. A gambler knows fully well, I should not gamble. Gambling is no good for me. And yet when the time comes, he starts gambling. All the evil deeds, understanding fully well that these are not good for me, and yet one keeps on performing because one is not the master of one's own mind. One has become a slave of one's own habit patterns. Therefore, Buddha teaches the second part of Dhamma, Samadhi, the mastery over the mind. Again, these 3 days we will try to understand how even Samadhi, Buddha differs from all the other teachers who teach Samadhi. He takes it at a much deeper level, much deeper level. All right, one has practiced Samadhi. One has developed the mastery over the mind. One is not performing any unwholesome action which will disturb peace and harmony of other beings. One is living a life of sila. One has developed samadhi. But if at the depth of the mind, if there are impurities, anusaya kilesa, sleeping volcanoes of impurities are there at the deepest level of the mind, one does not know when one or the other of this sleeping volcano will erupt. And one will again get overpowered by the impurity, and one will again start living a wrong life. A Buddha realizes this, practiced all the 8 jhanas, lokiya jhanas. He understands they don't work. final liberation has not come, full enlightenment has not come, because these impurities at a very deep level of the mind are still there. Unless these deep-rooted impurities are taken out, I am not a liberated person. I am not an enlightened person. So he works for the third, panya, wisdom, insight, purification of the mind at the deepest level. Again, panya of Buddha is different from the panya of other teachers. Everyone claims, develop panya, come out of craving, lobha, come out of aversion, dosha, come out of ignorance, moha. Buddha was not the only teacher who gave this teaching. So many teachers before Buddha said the same thing. We have a vast canvas with the spectrum of the entire Indian spirituality, and we see so many teachers announcing the same thing. Come out of craving, come out of aversion. Don't indulge in craving and aversion towards all these sensual objects. This was not a new contribution of Buddha. But yet, when we go deeper in this subject, we will find Buddha's contribution was unique. No other teacher could reach the depth which Buddha reached, and the technique that he gave, which takes everyone to that depth. You can purify your mind at the surface level. You can purify your mind at a little deeper level. But to purify the mind at the deepest level, at the root level, this was missing. Buddha discovered this. How to take out all the anusaya kilesa, the roots of impurities have to be taken out. So long as these roots are there, bhava after bhava, bhava after bhava, one keeps on rolling in misery, one keeps on rolling in misery, one cannot come out of misery. One may keep on taking births in very high planes, Brahmanic planes, Rupa Brahma or Arupa Brahma, but still one keeps on rotating, rotating. One cannot come out so long as those seeds are there. These anusaya kilesa are the seeds of bhava, bhava sankhara. These sankharas which give one bhava after the other, one bhava after the other, one has not come out of misery. This was the realization of Buddha. As we go deeper on the subject, tomorrow, day after tomorrow, we will find how Buddha could find out a way which could help people to get total purification of the mind. At the surface level, the teaching remains the same. Sila, Samadhi, Panya. Abstain from all kinds of unwholesome actions. Perform wholesome actions. Purify your mind. Buddha claims that this is paripunnam, kevalam paripunnam. Nothing else to be added. The entire Dhamma is included in it. Nothing is missing. In these three, Sila, Samadhi and Panya, nothing is missing. Nobody needs anything else to be added there. Kevalam paripunnam. And kevalam parisuddham. It is so pure that nothing else has to be added. Nothing is to be taken out and nothing else has to be added. It is so complete, paripunnam, nothing has to be added. So pure that nothing has to be taken out. There is no trace of impurity in it. There is nothing which somebody will say, oh no, this is not good. We better take it out. Nothing. And now we see, round the world, this technique of Buddha has traveled round the world. People from more than 100 countries have examined it, worked on it. And intellectuals, high intellectuals have worked on it. Scientists, engineers, doctors, psychiatrists, they worked on it. And with one voice they say, yes, nothing is missing. It is so complete, so total, nothing else is to be added. And there is nothing wrong. People from different sects come to these courses around the world. Hindus, Muslims, Christians, Jains, of course Buddhists, Jews, Parsis, Sikhs, and anybody from any religion, from any sect who has gone through these 10 days says, nothing wrong. There is nothing wrong in it. Nothing to be taken out. This is the beauty of Buddha's teaching. It is so complete that nothing has to be added. It is complete. You don't practice anything else. You just practice Sila, Samadhi, Panya. Enough. And it is so pure that nothing has to be taken out. Nobody can point out anything wrong in Sila. Nobody can point out anything wrong in Samadhi. Nobody can point out anything wrong in Panya. People have to accept. And they are accepting it. If we make a sect out of Buddha's teaching, if we make a blind faith in the name of Buddha's teaching, if we make a cult out of Buddha's teaching, if we make a philosophy out of Buddha's teaching, then difficulty comes. Every sect will have his own philosophy, his own cult, his own belief, his own dogma, his own rites, rituals, ceremonies. They all differ. But when you take the essence of Buddha's teaching, Sila, Samadhi, Panya, Sila, Samadhi, Panya, everyone has to accept it. Because the whole teaching is so scientific. So scientific. Buddha teaches Dhamma. Buddha does not establish a particular religion. A Buddha is not interested in establishing a sect. Wonderful words of Buddha, when people read, those who practice vipassana and they read Buddha's words, it is so inspiring. Such a pure person, no attachment, so detached. He is a Buddha, so detached. When he gives Dhamma to people, he says, I am not interested to make you my disciple. I am not interested. I am not interested to snatch you away from your old gurus. I am not interested. Your aim is to come out of misery. I am not interested to take you away from that aim. I am here. I have found out a technique. I am here to help you, to fulfill your aim. Everyone wants to come out of misery. Nobody wants to live a miserable life. Well, I am here to help you, to fulfill your aim, to come out of misery. I have a technique. Give a trial. He says, I want 7 days of your life. Give a trial. In the Uddambara Sutta, he says, come and give a trial for 7 days. I am not interested in making you my disciple. I am not interested to snatch you away from your old guru, your old teacher. I am not interested to take you away from your goal of liberation. I have got something and I want you just to give trial. This is Buddha's way of teaching. He is so detached. If so many people in the world start calling themselves Buddhist, you think Buddha will be very happy with that? Nothing doing. If people start practicing Sila, Samadhi, Panya, then yes, Buddha's teaching has started giving fruits. One may keep oneself calling a Buddhist, but one does not practice Sila, one does not practice Samadhi, one does not practice Panya. What one will get from the teaching of Buddha? One may not call oneself a Buddhist, but one may keep on practicing Sila, Samadhi, Panya, Sila, Samadhi, Panya. You will get the same result. He will come out of the misery. So Buddha was not interested in changing names of the people. Moggallan remained Moggallan. That is a Brahman name, a Brahman sect, a particular Brahman gotra. Kashyapa remained Kashyapa, a Brahman gotra. He didn't change them. He didn't say, you become Buddhayan now, no more Moggallan. Nothing doing. Sila, Samadhi, Panya, Sila, Samadhi, Panya, and that also at the experiential level. Merely playing devotional games in the name of Dhamma is not sufficient. Merely playing intellectual games in the name of Dhamma is not sufficient. It is the experiential part of Dhamma which gives result. And this is what is needed. And this is what was the contribution of the Buddha, which others could not give. All others kept on talking, live the life of Sila, develop mastery over your mind, have samadhi, keep your mind concentrated one-pointedly, purify your mind, remain detached, remain free from craving, vita raga, free from aversion, vita dosha. This teaching was there. But there was nobody to say, this is how you become Vitaraga. This is how you become Vitadosa. This is how you purify your mind at the deepest level. This was the biggest contribution of Buddha. Therefore, at the surface level, it looks Buddha's teaching is so simple. Yes, so simple. And yet, at the deeper level, it is so difficult. To actually practice Dhamma is so difficult. One has to work hard. Merely listening to such discourses or merely reading scriptures, they are very good. We don't deny. Listening to Dhamma talks is very good. Kalena Dhamma Savanam Etang Mangalam Uttamam. And to discuss Dhamma, Kalena Dhamma Sakaccha Etang Mangalam Uttamam. Wonderful, nothing wrong. But if you just keep on discussing and debating, and you don't practice, then it doesn't work. This is the first step. You have to listen. Then you have to intellectualize, understand. And then you have to start taking steps. If you are not taking steps on Dhamma, you don't get the fruits of Dhamma. Buddha teaches Dhamma, the law of nature, the universal law of nature, which is applicable to one and all. And it teaches in such simple language. We make it complicated because when we don't practice it, we make a philosophy out of it. And we start fighting. Your belief is wrong, my belief is all right. Your belief is wrong, my belief is correct. What we gain? Even if my belief is all right, very good, yet I don't practice, then what is the use of this belief? I am born in this Dhamma land. I feel very grateful and proud also that I am born in this Dhamma land. Where 80% or more than 80% of the people do not believe that there is a soul inside. Where 80% or more than 80% of people do not believe that there is a creator of God, there is a creator of the world, a God Almighty. And now last more than 2 decades I have gone and lived in a country and I have been traveling around the world where more than 80% of people believe that there is a soul inside. Where more than 80% of the people believe that there is a creator God who has created the entire universe. I used to play such game myself before I came in contact with Buddha, before I came in contact with my Sayaji Ubakin, before I came in contact with Dhamma. Dhamma means practical Dhamma. I used to play this game myself, these philosophical arguments, debates. There's a soul, no, there is a no soul. You've got 1,000 arguments that there is no soul, and those people will have 1,001 argument that there is soul. You have 1,000 arguments there is no creator God, and they will say 1,001 arguments to say there is a creator God. Where will you reach by these debates and these arguments? They don't take you anywhere. When you practice Dhamma and you experience yourself that the entire phenomena is nothing but mind-matter, interaction of mind-matter, 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 which at the apparent level, it looks so solid. But when you observe it, observe it, observe it, as Buddha wants you to observe, as Dhamma wants you to observe, as the law of nature wants you to observe, you will find that this solidity gets dissolved, divided, dissected, disintegrated, dissolved, 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 mere vibrations, mere vibration. Sabbo loko pakampito, pakampito. Sabbo pajjalito loko, sabbo loko pakampito. The entire universe is nothing but combustion and vibration, vibration. A wonderful discovery made by Buddha, which no other teacher before Buddha could find out. This was Buddha's contribution to the mankind. That although it looks all solid all around, nothing is solid. This is only apparent truth. It appears to be so, apparent truth only. But the actual truth, the deeper truth, is mere vibration, mere vibration, mere vibration. This has to be experienced. If this is not experienced, and you make a philosophy out of it, that look, there is no atta, there is only vibration, 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 you have not experienced it, then how does it help you? But when you experience yourself, you find your ego is getting dissolved, dissolved, dissolved. You come out of your ego, you are a liberated person, and that is an atta, no ego. You may keep on saying there is no soul and you are full of ego, then Buddha's teaching has not helped you. Your ego is there. Your ego is so strong. And you just believe there is no soul, there is no soul, there is no soul. All right, there is no soul. But my ego is there. I have not learned anything from Buddha. My ego gets dissolved. Then I understand. Look, there is no soul. Only mind, only matter. Interaction of the two. Mere vibrations, mere vibrations. As we come to the third thing, Panya, later on, tomorrow, day after tomorrow, we will understand how Buddha took everybody to the stage where the ego naturally gets dissolved by understanding at the experiential level. It is not an intellectual game. It is not an emotional or devotional game. It is not a blind belief. It is not a dogma. It is not a cult. It is not a philosophy. This is the truth. A truth which can be realized by one and all, a Christian or a Muslim or a Hindu or a Jain, a Burmese or a Indian or a American or a Russian or a Chinese, makes no difference. Law of nature is law of nature. It's applicable to everyone. This was the discovery made by Buddha. Some people kept on arguing that we don't agree what you say. Some people started accepting it. So what? He just discovered something for the good of others and distributed to people. If somebody doesn't accept, he is not losing anything. He is there to say the truth to the people. Slowly people started accepting. But then again, when we make a philosophy out of it, when we make a cult out of it, then we start quarreling. And the pure Dhamma is lost, the essence is round. And it is rotating on its own axis. It is round and rotating on its own axis. Some believed, some didn't believe. So what? Later on people started believing it. The fact is fact. The world was round even before Galileo found it out. The world was not flat before Galileo. The world was round at the time of Galileo. The world remained round after Galileo. Newton found out that there is a law of gravity. He announced it. People accepted it. Some didn't accept, but slowly everybody accepted it. The law of gravity was there even before Newton. At the time of Newton or after Newton, the law of relativity was there before Einstein, at the time of Einstein or after Einstein. Similarly, the law of Paticca Samuppada was there even before Buddha or at the time of Buddha or after Buddha. This is law of nature. If out of avidya, out of ignorance, one does not know what is happening within the framework of the body, every moment there is some sensation or the other throughout the body. Wherever there is life, there is a sensation. All these six sense doors coming in contact with their object, respective objects, there is a Vedana. Phassa paccaya Vedana. If one does not have the ability to feel the Vedana, how can one understand that Vedana paccaya tanaha? That was there even before Buddha. Vedana, paccaya, tanaha was there before Buddha. This law was there. This was at the time of Buddha. This is also after Buddha. That is why the law, the Dhamma, is eternal. Esa Dhammo Sanantano. It is Sanatan, eternal. Buddha or no Buddha, it is there. A Buddha, with all the efforts, discovers it and makes use of it for his own liberation, and with all the compassion distributes to others. Look, this is how you are miserable. Vedana paccaya tanha, Vedana paccaya tanha. Look, I will give you a way by which you come out of it. Now Vedana is there, but no more tanha. With every time you experience Vedana, panya must arise. O anicca, anissa, anissa, anissa. This Vedana or that Vedana, it is anissa, anissa. By experience, again, if it becomes a philosophy that every Vedana is anissa, every Vedana is anissa, you don't get anything. Then it is merely a theory for you. But if you experience, look, a Vedana has arisen, and sooner or later it passes away. However unpleasant a sensation may be, however unpleasant a Vedana may be, it is bound to pass away. However pleasant a Vedana may be, it is bound to pass away. It does not stay. It arises and passes away. It arises and passes away. Udaye, vyaye, udaye, vyaye, samudaye dhammanupassi viharati, vaye dhammanupassi viharati. This was the contribution of Buddha. He took people to that depth. Understand this law. The Vedana is there all the time, and it arises, it passes away. It arises, it passes away. And because you are ignorant of it, you keep on reacting. If it is pleasant, you react with lobha. If it is unpleasant, you react with dosa. This is what you are doing the whole life. And you are creating misery after misery for yourself. You keep on multiplying your misery, multiplying your misery. Look, there is a way to come out of misery, which takes you to the stage where Vedana Nirodha Tanha Nirodho, Tanha Nirodha Dukha Nirodho. No more Dukha now. There is a way. There is a practice. There is a technique. And this was the beauty of Buddha, not giving sermons alone. If he was just giving sermons, then he was no Buddha. He was some other very highly intellectual. India was full of intellectuals. This philosophy, that philosophy, he would have been just one amongst them. Oh no, no. He was a practical person. He became enlightened because he practiced this. And let me tell you one thing. Being born in a very staunch Hindu family where all these teachings are there in Gita, in Upanishad, in Vedanta, everywhere. When I went to my teacher, Sayaji Ubakhin, I feel so grateful to him. He's my Dhamma father. He gave me a new life. On the fourth day, the fifth day, when avidya,
The shell of avidya was broken and he made me realize things inside. The entire body is mass of subatomic particles, things arising, passing, arising, passing. I understood. This is what I was looking for. I had all the teachings in the scriptures, Gita, Veda, Upanishad, everywhere the same teaching, come out of lobha, come out of dosa. How to come out of lobha? How to come out of dosa? There's no teaching. Only keep on intellectualizing it. Only keep on understanding at the intellectual level. Doesn't help. How to practice it? And here is a person who gives me a path where you can experience it at the deepest level. Come, this is where raga arises, lobha arises. See, this is where dosa arises, at the depth of your mind. The interaction of mind and matter, the currents, cross currents, undercurrents, constantly going on within the framework of the body. When he made me realize that, I was so grateful to him. That is what fascinated me. The Buddha's teaching fascinated me because of the practice. If it was only an intellectual exercise, I doubt that I would have gone on the path of Buddha. I would have said, very good, very good. Our Gita also says so. Our Upanishad also says so. This is wonderful, very good. I would not have worked on it. But because a technique was given to me, look, this is how you can come out of raga. This is how you can come out of dosa. And it worked. Such an angry person, a person full of ego, when started working on it, found, yes, it starts getting dissolved. The impurity gets dissolved, not merely at the surface level, the impurity gets dissolved at the deeper level, at the deepest level. I feel myself very fortunate that I was born in this wonderful land, the land of Dhamma. Even before coming in contact with this technique, as a businessman, as an industrialist, I used to go around the world, meet people, and from the very childhood had great attraction towards spirituality, religions. So I used to meet people, discuss spirituality, discuss religion. And after I got this wonderful Dhamma, now distributing it, I have to go around the world, different places. My own experience, I have found nowhere else, even the countries which claim that they are followers of Buddha, nowhere else the purity of this technique is maintained. I am very fortunate. I was born in a country where the teaching of Buddha is maintained in its pristine purity. Vipassana, how it should be practiced, is maintained here. And I feel very fortunate that I came in contact with a saintly person who so compassionately and so freely, without expecting anything in return, he was not interested to convert me, to make me a Buddhist out of me, nothing doing. You become a follower of Sila, Samadhi, Panya, and I am quite happy, that's all. I came in contact with such a saintly person. I feel myself very fortunate. And my brothers and sisters who are here, I feel you are all very fortunate. You are very fortunate. There must be some very good kudo of the past, very good meritorious deed because of which you are born in this country. And because of this you come in contact with Dhamma. Now most important thing is that you have to practice. If you just accept Dhamma at the devotional level, oh, Buddha's teaching wonderful. Buddha's teaching is so wonderful. You won't gain anything. Accept some more merits you may gain, that's all. Or you intellectualize Buddha's teaching. Look, it is so logical. Look, it is so rational. Look, it is so scientific. Yet you don't get anything. But when you start practicing it, it is the experiential part of Dhamma which was taught by Buddha. He was not interested in merely giving sermons. The experiential part of Dhamma was given by Buddha. And fortunately, this country has maintained the experiential part of Dhamma. May all of you get time to taste pure Dhamma at the experiential level. May all of you come out of your misery. May all of you enjoy real peace, real harmony, real happiness, real happiness. Yes, some questions have come, and they seem to be very good questions. Coming from a staunch Hindu family, what was it that brings you practice Dhamma at Ubakhin Center? Very good question. It is true, I came from a very staunch Hindu family, and I can say to some extent I was preaching Gita, Upanishad, etc., giving discourses in some of the organizations around. And in those of my preachings, I will talk about Vita Raga, Vita Dosha, come out of craving, come out of aversion. But when I go back home, many a times, with the head of my pillow, I will be full of tears, because I have talked so much about Vita Raga, come out of craving, come out of aversion, but I have got so much of craving, so much of aversion in me, such a big ego in me, so much anger in me, I am not coming out of it. What is the use of my talking to others? This was a problem that I had. Fortunately, due to some reason, I went to Sayaji Ubakhin, and when I passed through that course, in the midst of the course, it became very clear that here is a practical way. It's not mere teaching. It is not mere telling people, you don't do this, you don't do this, you don't. This is a teaching which says, how not to do this? How not to do this? Don't generate craving. Don't generate aversion. Very easy to give such sermons. But how not to generate craving? How not to generate aversion? When he took me to the stage where I feel my sensations, and he says the sensations, if they are pleasant, then only you generate craving. If the sensations are unpleasant, then only you generate aversion. Just observe. Just observe. Do nothing. Just observe. And you are coming out of the old habit pattern. This is what took me to the path of Buddha, because it was so practical and so result-oriented. Not only just practical, which doesn't give result. But result here and now. Could you please explain observing mere vibrations and experience the dissolving of ego? We will come to it tomorrow, day after tomorrow, in more detail, how the whole technique helps us by observing the sensations, how you come out of all the miseries, and the root of all misery is ego. So long as my ego is there, and so long as my attachment to ego is there, there is bound to be craving, there is bound to be aversion. And that we will discuss tomorrow, day after tomorrow. If Buddhism is not a religion, then is it just a way of life? Yes. When you say religion, the word religion today, around the world, everywhere, has developed a particular meaning of it. That means rites, rituals, religious ceremonies, celebrations, these festivals, etc. If we take Buddha's teaching only in that way, then we have not understood Buddha very well. What he teaches is Dhamma. Attano lakkhanam dhareti iti Dhamma. Attano sabhav dhareti iti Dhamma. Dhamma is one's own nature. The nature of anger is to make you miserable. The nature of craving is to make you miserable. This is law of nature. And Buddha taught this law of nature. So Dhamma for Buddha is law of nature. And if you understand that law of nature, then you start living a better life, because you are living in line with the law of nature. You are not breaking the law of nature, and that is why you live a better life. You are coming out of misery. And in this respect, we can say it is a way of life. It is a code of conduct. How to live peacefully and harmoniously within, and how to generate nothing but peace and harmony for others. This is a way of life, is Buddha taught, a practical way of life. are heaven and hell places where one goes to depending on his or her good deeds or bad deeds done in the past and life as a human being? If I say yes, then you will just believe yes. If I say no, then you may believe, you may not believe. Belief does not help, does not take us anywhere. I say experience it. When I go to different countries and I find people who are more scientific, more rational, when I talk them about hell and heaven, they say, what hell, what heaven? We don't believe. I say, all right, don't believe. The hell is within you. The heaven is within you. Buddha said, all the lokas are within this framework of the body. When you generate anger, you start burning in the hellfire within. When you generate metta, karuna, you start enjoying the peace, the kingdom of heaven within. So it is within you. You experience it and then believe. Don't believe. So main thing of Buddha is experience and then accept it. Without experiencing, don't accept it. After establishing sila and samadhi, how do you control the vision of things? This is what we will be coming tomorrow, day after tomorrow. The sila as taught by Buddha. Again, different from others. The samadhi as taught by Buddha, little different from others. We'll take you to panya as taught by Buddha, again little different from others. We will discuss tomorrow, we'll discuss day after tomorrow. The connection between Buddhism and philosophy. For me, Buddha never taught any philosophy. He was against all philosophies. The word philosophy, according to the Indian language, is ditthi. And Buddha condemned all ditthis. What he taught was samma ditthi. Samma ditthi means the reality that you experience yourself. This is the truth for you. Otherwise, it is all ditthi. Even however correct it may be, for you it is a ditthi because you are not experiencing it, you are just believing it. Somebody has said so and you are believing it. It doesn't help. You experience yourself and then you believe and then you practice and then live the life. It becomes Buddha's teaching. Buddha's teaching is to live the life according to the law of nature. And the law of nature wants you not to defile your mind. As soon as you defile your mind, the law of nature starts punishing you. You may call yourself a Buddhist or non-Buddhist, makes no difference. You may call yourself a Burmese or an Indian or an American, makes no difference. As soon as you break the law of the nature, you start generating defilements, anger, hatred, ill will, animosity, anything, you become miserable. You are bound to become miserable. And if you don't generate impurity, you keep your mind pure and you generate metta, karuna, mudita, upekha, oh, the nature starts rewarding you. You feel so peace, so harmony. This is the law of nature, which is for everyone. The points of the contribution of Buddha. Yes, we will be coming to the points of contribution of the Buddha because, as I said, I found something very special in Buddha's teaching, which was not available anywhere. And now I am going around the world and people from different communities, different religions are coming to these Vipassana courses and they accept one and all that there is something very special in the Buddha's teaching. They don't start calling themselves Buddhist. I don't insist them you call yourself Buddhist. But they start practicing Vipassana by which they understand there is something very, very solid which helps them to live a very good life. A big change comes in the life. Christians have come and leaders of Christians, Christian priests and nuns have come, about 700 of them have come till now and more are coming every year. And they say, you are teaching Christianity in the name of Buddha. I smile at them, all right, you say whatever you like. I am teaching you sila, samadhi, panya, and when you practice it, you get the good benefit, isn't it? And they say, yes, good benefit. It is benefit is there for everybody, whoever practices. This is the speciality of Buddha to which you will be coming tomorrow, day after tomorrow. Some foreigners asked me several times, I believe in reincarnation. What I should do to be born as a tree? What I should answer to convince him? Such questions keep on coming to me. Some people believe in reincarnation, some people do not believe in reincarnation. They come to me, how shall we accept reincarnation? We don't believe in reincarnation. I say, all right, don't believe reincarnation, but you just observe inside. Every moment reincarnation is taking place. Every moment you are dying and new birth is coming, dying, new birth is coming. This is the incarnation, moment to moment, moment to moment. You observe it. You observe it. Are you becoming like a tree? So ignorant, knowing nothing? Or are you become like animal with so much of anger, hatred, fear? Or are you becoming a human being, better human being, or becoming a Deva, or becoming a Brahma? You observe yourself and accept it. That is happening this very life, here and now, within yourself. And Buddha taught something which is here and now within ourselves.
This is Angulimala. Angulimala does not practice Sila, Samadhi, Pautinya, but he attains Why?
Not possible. No, the question is, Angulimala does not practice Sila, Samadhi and Panya, but he attained Arhantship. No. Buddha said, Ekayano Maggo, only one path. There can't be any other path. Not because Buddha placed his hand on the head of Angulimala, from now onwards you are Arhant. Nothing happens like that. He had to practice. But he had been practicing in so many lives. In this life, he went to a wrong path, started killing people. But so much of his own parami of the past was there. And therefore, it took him less time to become an Arhant. That's a different thing. But he had to practice. Everyone had to practice to reach the goal. Without practice, there is no magic, no miracle which can take you to the final goal. We have been instructed differently by some Kamatthanacharya teachers. While meditating, sitting in a cross-legged posture, or sometimes feel some pain, Vedana on our body, some instruct us to neglect the pain and to keep locating our consciousness or anapana, giving the reason the consciousness of pain will add more pain. Some, for example, so-and-so method, instruct us to be conscious of every sense occurring on our body and mind. In your experience, which will be more effective and setting up samadhi and panya? We are not here to condemn different techniques. No, Dhamma does not teach that. Whatever helped me, and I found it so effective, I found it so result-oriented, giving result here and now, benefited me, and this is what I am distributing, and people are getting benefited. And this we will discuss tomorrow, day after tomorrow, as to how this technique, which now, in India, at Igatpuri, we have started making research of the Buddha's word. All the Buddha's words, Tipitaka, are being put in the computer. They already put in the computer. And then a research will be made as to the practice that we are doing now, which I learned from Sayaji here. How is it compatible to the words of Buddha? Is it exactly according to word of Buddha, or is there any deviation? And more we go through the scriptures, we find it is totally in line with the teaching of Buddha. And more literature will come out of that. But again, the main thing is everyone has to practice. Even if you accept that the computer says so, it doesn't help. The scripture says so, it doesn't help. You have to experience yourself. That's very important. Buddha taught Dhamma to erase, to destroy anatta, to destroy atta. Yet, those who practice for a long time and do not erase anatta, why it is? Buddha taught to erase atta, not anatta, to take out atta, to take out ego. And if somebody says that I am practicing vipassana as taught by Buddha, and the atta is increasing, the ego is increasing, there is something wrong. Either there is something wrong in the technique, or there is something wrong in this person who is not practicing properly. If one is practicing properly as taught by Buddha, the ego must get dissolved little by little, little. There's no magic, no miracle. To reach the final stage where there is no more ego takes a long time. But some dissolution of ego must come as you proceed on the path. This is the real teaching of Buddha. The result must be there. Can four sublime truth prompt to reach Nibbana? Well, all the four sublime truths, metta, karuna, mudita, upekha, are very good. They can take you to 8 jhanas. But if you give a turn to these and add vipassana to it, then it will take you to nibbana. Metta, karuna, mudita, upekha, these four sublime truths were there even before Buddha. And all the 8 jhanas were there even before Buddha. But they remained only lokiya jhana. It was the addition of vipassana to these jhanas which made them lokottara jhana. And that was contribution of Buddha. It seems a long question, and my friends have made a summary of it, small one. You have taught vipassana in many countries. Can you say how many have been liberated? Everyone is liberated. Every moment one gets liberated little by little. If you are a very angry person and you become little less, you have got 100 tons of weight over your head. All anger, 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 you are so heavy. 1 ton is taken away, you are liberated 1%. 2 tons are taken away, you are liberated 2%. Everybody who practices vipassana gets liberated little or more, as much as one practices. Have you any intention to come to Burma often? I like to come to Burma very often. This is my land of birth. And not only one birth, this is a land of 2 births. And the second birth is more important for me because I got Dhamma here. As the bird has got 2 births, one birth coming out of the mother's womb and the second birth coming out of the shell of the egg. Now the shell of the egg is the shell of ignorance. My mother gave me one birth and my Sayaji Ubakin gave me another birth. Broken the shell and a new Goenka came out of it. At least I've got great faith in Dhamma. They've got no doubt about Dhamma. Now practice and take advantage of Dhamma for your good and for the good of others. Others will get attracted by you. In your next lecture, please explain about vipassana, how it helps to free the misery. Certainly. This is what we'll be discussing tomorrow, day after tomorrow. If vipassana does not liberate us from misery, then this again becomes a rite or a ritual or a ceremony. It does not help. It must liberate us from misery as much as we work. There's no magic, no miracle. As much as we work, that much benefit must come here and now. Akaliko. This is Buddha's teaching. Akaliko. It should not take time. You practice now and you get benefit after death. Yes, after death you will get, no doubt. But now you must get something. And this practice makes you accept that, yes, it gives me benefit now, here and now. May all of you get benefit here and now. Practice. Good? Liberated? Very good.